This is the SF Signal Podcast, episode should be number 217. I am your host. My name is Patrick Hester, and I'm an author, a blogger, and a Hugo Award winner. Before we get too far into it tonight, I just want to say that we are glad that Charles Tan, who is one of us, came through the recent typhoon that hit the Philippines and is still tweeting and generally being Charles. We're very glad to hear that he is well. I know a lot of folks weren't as lucky as he was, so I encourage you to seek out any reputable charity and do what you can. $1.50, every cent matters and can help people who are in need. This week, we are talking about which character in SF&F would you be if you could and why? And I've assembled some folks to talk about this. It's going to be a little bit more intimate this week. We don't have as many people, as many voices. That's because at least one loser dumped us, went off and did something else tonight. Derek. Anyway, let's introduce people. We're gonna go ladies first. We're going to say hello to Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I run Bookworm Blues and the column Special Needs and Strange Worlds on SF Signal.
Yeah, you liking that?
I love it. It's been a ton of fun.
Awesome. Not like I was putting you on the spot or anything.
It's been great. I usually do just a month long feature of it on my website every year in May. And it's been really nice to be able to explore the issue as much as I want in many different directions as I want. It's been nice. So thank you guys for that.
Oh, you know what? I don't care what John says. I think it's awesome.
Well, that's good.
I'm kidding. He loves it. So I want to say you are Bookworm Blues on Twitter and on Facebook?
Yes, I'm Bookworm Blues on Twitter and on Facebook, and I annoy people liberally on Twitter. So,
well, this is what I was going to say. Yeah, this is what I was going to say. If you do follow her, occasionally you will get bombed by cuteness. And she did that today. There was a photo that was absolutely adorable.
My kid with the bedhead.
With the bedhead, yes. And the face. Oh my God.
She's so used to me taking pictures of her. It's great.
Well, you know, I think kids today are used to that. I mean, when I was growing up, there was hardly ever a camera around.
Yeah.
But now it's like everybody has a camera. They got cameras on their phones. They got cameras everywhere. Crazy.
Yeah, well, and I'm a semi-pro photographer on top of it, so that she's always got one in her face.
That was the other thing. You shared the picture of the moon. That was awesome.
Thank you.
You said that it actually appeared on the news?
Yeah, it was on the news. The local Utah news picked it up. The director of the night newscast got it, and they showed it three times. And nice. Then I know Wyoming, someone in Colorado showed it on the news, and I believe it's been in Montana as well. So.
Wow. Yeah, that was gorgeous. That was a great shot. Good for you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Next up, we got a newbie. Actually, his interview that we did at Worldcon should have gone live last Thursday. But this is his first appearance as an irregular on the podcast, because now he's also writing stuff for the website. And his name is Django.
Hi, I'm Django Wexler. I'm a fantasy author. My first novel, The Thousand Names, came out in July of this year. I have a middle grade book called The Forbidden Library coming out next April, which I'm super excited about. And I'm now writing, just as of last week, the Lost in Anime Land column for SF Signal about anime from a SFF point of view.
What do you think of the new Internet Explorer anime thing?
They've been doing that for a while. It's not actually that new of a concept in Japan, but it usually doesn't escape over here. There was a whole Windows 7 anime mascot too, but I guess it plays well there. Almost everything has like an anime mascot. Like coal companies have anime mascots. In fact, one of them got their own show. I'm not super sure how that happened. But there's a show called Binshotan, which is based on the anime mascot of a coal company, I think. It was sort of hard to follow. But it, explaining that sort of thing is kind of my mission here at SF Signal.
And so
sort of why Japan is as weird as it is.
So two things you mentioned that I want you to expand upon and explain to people. First off, you threw out there middle grade. Not everybody understands what middle grade is. Why don't you explain what that means?
Middle grade as a whole is usually characterized as the 8 to 12 age range. It's the sort of block that comes before YA, which is kind of 13 to 17. I tend to think of it as like middle grade is like Harry Potter book one. If you guys, if anyone remembers what that is, I feel really old because that was like a long time ago now. And
by the time you get to
feel
four,
like it was the recent past.
And by the time you get to book four, you're having nightmares.
Yeah. But whereas as YA, young adult is more like, you know, Twilight or The Hunger Games or whatever. My book in particular is kind of at the top end of middle grade. So it's age 10 or 11 to 12 is the target demo, as they say in the industry.
Wow. You mentioned Twilight and The Hunger Games on this podcast. I don't know that we're going to be invited back.
Oh, man. I failed already.
I am still 100% Twilight free. I did make the mistake of watching The Hunger Games movie. And that is, what was it, like 10 hours of my life that I'll never get back?
So
that's what it felt like.
I usually try to like read these super popular books when they come out just because like I feel bad about condemning something without reading it. So like, you know, I read Harry Potter and I liked it. I read The Hunger Games and it's good. The first two books are pretty good. The third book kind of falls apart, but I could not get through Twilight, and I'm not afraid to admit it. That I tried it, and 100 pages in I was like, ugh, I can't take this anymore. I did not try to read 50 Shades of Grey though.
So Hunger Games is the first book. Catching Fire is the second book. Yeah. Flaming Bag of Poop on the Doorstep is the third book.
Yes, that about summarizes. Nah, probably that's unfair. But
send your hate mail to voicemail at SF. No, anyway. And the other thing is, not everybody understands what anime is. Do you have like a brief description of what anime is?
I mean, it's basically just.
It's not manga.
No, it describes both a medium and a genre. In a very simple sense, it's just cartoons that are made in Japan, but it has a specific style and set of tropes and stories associated with it, in the same way that, you know, U.S. cartoons are associated with particular style and genres. Manga is the equivalent of comic books, although it's pretty different from the way U.S. comics are done because they use a very different economic model. They don't publish monthly, they publish weekly, and they publish in black and white, and there's a bunch of other differences.
Right. And does everybody remember when the only anime on American television was brought to us by Harmony Gold?
Yes.
Yes.
I certainly do. I grew up, my first taste of it was there was a Saturday anime feature on Cartoon Network for a long time. I don't know if they still have it. I don't watch Cartoon Network anymore. But
Toonami.
Yeah. It's just that I don't have TV anymore. I watch some shows. I watched Archer, for example, which I love.
But, I love Archer.
But they used to have these shows where they would broadcast like just like whatever they could find in the bargain bin.
Yep.
And so they'd have these like three episodes out of a 10 episode series from the middle, just kind of smushed together, dubbed by guys who didn't really know what they were doing. And then like when there was objectionable content, they would just like cut it and not, you know, provide any explanation. So the shows did not make a heck of a lot of sense.
So have I ever told you my Robotech story?
No.
So I was watching, there was two shows that were on at the same time and I had to make a decision. I could either watch Transformers on Channel 26 or I could watch this new thing called Robotech that was on Channel 53. This was out in Fresno, California. So I started watching Robotech on Channel 53 and all my friends were like, no, you need to be watching Transformers. I'm like, screw you. This is really good, whatever this is. And so I was watching Robotech. And they kept showing commercials for Sierra Comics and Books in Clovis. And and they were like, oh, you can come and you can get Robotech merchandise. And I'm like, oh, my mom, you got to take me. You got to take me. You got to take me. I got to go. They got Robotech, mom. You got to take me. So she eventually relents and she takes me out to Sierra Comics and Books, which is in Clovis, which when you're 10, 11 years old, something like that, 12, whatever, it feels like it's a million miles away. Really, it's like 10 minutes. But you go out there and so they had, and then I found out about comic book conventions, but I wasn't able to go to a comic book convention until I was about 18. And I go to this comic book convention and I had loved Robotech and they'd like played it once all the way through and then they didn't do it again. They didn't like do reruns. They did Macross, they did the Robotech Masters, and then they did the Invid. And so I had this memory of this great show. And I'm walking through this comic book convention, and this guy has a table, and he's selling videos, and one of them is Macross. And I'm like, oh, it's Macross! And so I got that, and I also got the Dolph Lundgren. It was a, I won't say that it was a bootleg, but it was not an official version of Dolph Lundgren's Punisher. And I got those at this convention, and I go home, and I put the Macross movie in. And it was kind of Robotech, but it wasn't. And then, you know, when they got to the point where Minmay took off her clothes and started showering, I'm going, whoa, this is way different.
Yeah. The Japanese don't have, like, that's okay on primetime TV, which is a little weird by our standards. But, you know, they're a little more relaxed about that, but really uptight about some other stuff. So, you know, it all evens out.
Well, that was very interesting and very eye-opening for me, and I was like, huh.
So would you say that Robotech is, like, to blame for your, you know, comic book convention nerddom?
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing that tripped me out was my friend and I went, and as we're walking up to this convention, it was also a Star Trek convention. It was like a hybrid. And as we're walking up, there's a guy dressed in full Borg outfit. I mean, completely. Nice. He's a complete Borg, and he's standing outside smoking a cigarette.
I like it.
And we thought that was just so strange. That chuckle's coming from Jeff Patterson, who I haven't introduced yet. I want to go ahead and introduce him, Django, before we keep going here. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
How's it going?
When I was a kid, Battle of the Planets was on. So Sandy Frank production. You know, I want to say straight up that I'm really glad to be here with Sarah, but I'm very honored to be here with Django Wexler, primarily because he's the guest on this podcast whose name yields the highest Scrabble score. So it really is a mark for this show, and I really want to congratulate John and Patrick for getting him on.
You can't use proper names in Scrabble. Dun, dun, dun.
Hey, Jeff Patterson. I blog at Gravity Lens, which can be found at baddaystudio.com, and I am Jeff Patterson 11 on Twitter.
Jeff, I'm horribly, horribly confused. How did we get in trouble with Fred? I still don't understand what we did that we got in trouble with Fred.
You said to me, when are we recording the next episode? And we didn't actually have a date in place, but we had decided to do it midweek. So instead of explaining that, I simply said, oh, we're going to record one probably sometime in the next week.
And that got us in trouble with Fred.
Yes. And so
He goes to one science fiction convention. He comes back all uppity.
I took the heat on that. But yes, we are recording this week.
And of course, we're talking about the Three Horsemen.
The Three Horsemen, the orphan podcast to this one.
Have you received a cease and desist from the producers of Sleepy Hollow yet?
No, I have not.
Okay.
Nor do I expect I will. So. Somehow I believe we are below their notice.
Now I'm going to put Sarah on the spot. Sarah, you said you have read and reviewed Django's book.
Yes.
And you liked it.
I did like it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. Very ambitious for a first novel, and I really enjoyed it. I can't wait for more.
I'm working hard on that. The next one comes out in July.
Yeah, well, he's working so hard on that. He's got time to be on our podcast. So
I agree, it's not fast enough. Publishing is too slow.
I'm just teasing. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought you did really, really good, and I'm very excited to see where you take it.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Great to hear that. I love it. That's the best thing about being an author, and you write stuff and people tell you that, oh, it was good.
Obviously the sequel is going to be, the 1001 names.
Yeah. I figure maybe we'll just add one each time. So we'll be up to, like, I don't know, 1,005. But it leaves plenty of room for expansion if I turn into the Robert Jordan strategy.
Well, now if you were a software developer, you would know that you need to do it in increments of 10. That way you have extra space in between in case you want to do something in the middle.
Yeah, but even if you do that, you know, you're going to have fans 10 years from now that say, you know, after 1,004, he was just phoning it in. So,
yeah. If I was doing it in software, it would have been the 1,024 names anyway. because you can't. Everything has to be powered
They
changed
two. That standard. I heard they changed that. They gave 1024 a different name now.
I'm confused.
It was on QI. Ignore me.
Okay.
I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about anymore.
After I left software, I'm like, I don't have to pay attention to that stuff anymore. Yay! Now I don't.
All right, we better get back on track. Let's look at what's our topic. So our topic this week is, which character in SFNF would you like to be if you could, and why? This is pretty straightforward. I thought this would be fun. So who wants to go first? Let's go with Jeff. Jeff, who do you want to be?
Well, I have to preface my words, as I always do, because this is kind of a loaded question. And it can be answered two ways. Number one, do you mean that I'm living as the character through the events of the book? Or do you mean that I'm simply dropping into the character's life devoid of the constraints of the story that the character is from? And let me explain why those two things are different. Number one, I would love to be Jubal Harshaw from Stranger in a Strange Land. In fact, I've kind of attempted to pattern my life after him in a small way. The problem is I really don't want to watch Michael Valentine die. I love Marquis de Carabas from Neverwhere, but the whole get tortured and murdered and have your heart ripped out thing is not really in my plans for anytime soon.
Wasn't Jubal Harshaw at least partially a Heinlein self-portrait? That's what I always heard.
Oh, probably. Yeah, he was a Mary Sue, no doubt.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to answer the question from that direction, the answer is going to be Jerry Cornelius from Michael Moorcock. Specifically, if I had to pick one of the dozens of instantiations that Cornelius has, it's probably going to be Jerry Cornelian from Dancers at the End of Time, who basically sits at the end of time and has a grand old time getting drunk and promoting anarchy and traveling back in time and seeing the rest of the human race screw up from time to time. However, if you mean dropping into the character's life and not having to worry about the story, I really got to go with the TV version of Buck Rogers. And the only reason I would say that is because his nemesis was Princess Ardala, and the only thing she really wants to do is get him into bed. So if I have the option to end galactic warfare by hopping into bed with Princess Ardala while she's wearing her big Vegas showgirl outfits, I'm in. I'm sold at that point. So,
deeby. So earlier today, my boss asked me, one of my bosses, I have two, my two bosses, it's going to be a new sitcom on NBC. One of my bosses came in and he said, is the glass half full or half empty? And you can't say it's half full or half empty. You have to say something else. Which is it? And I said, yes.
Okay.
So how's that for an answer, Jeff? Yes.
Well, see, I happen to disagree, because an engineer would say that the glass is twice as large as it needs to be for the job it is currently doing.
Well, that's why then I came up with, I did a little search and I found that whether the glass is half empty or half full, all that really matters is there's room for more wine.
Yes.
The smart ass philosopher says, of course, the glass is full. It's half full of water and half full of air.
Mm-hmm.
Done. Why is that a hard question?
So I think it's an open-ended question on purpose, Jeff, because it's okay. Up to you to decide. You know, if you want to be Rand Althor and you want to lose your hand because you think it's going to be cool to be with Avienda and Elaine and what's the other one? Min. Then go for it. If you want to be Wonder Woman because you think it's
spoilers,
it'd be great to be an Amazon and maybe lead your people into war or something, you know, against Aquaman. Go for it. It's whatever you want to be.
I was actually trying to think of characters who didn't have anything really horrible happen to them, and I can't even think of his name from Pandora's Star, the leader of the industrialist family. Damn it, I can't think of his name. But no, I'm going to stick with Jerry Cornelius because, you know, number one, he occurs about 15 different times throughout the multiverse history. And God knows his character has been not ripped off, but certainly has inspired a lot of other characters, Luther Arkwright and others to mention. Plus, he's been drawn by Mobius a bunch of times, and I can't think of a greater honor than being drawn by Mobius.
Very cool. Okay, Sarah.
All right, so I did not think about this as deeply as Jeff did.
Don't feel bad.
Not feel bad about that.
I definitely did not psychoanalyze this question. I just answered it. So,
well, if it makes you feel any better, I send out invitations and I say, name three books that blah 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 blah. And Fred comes to the podcast and he's like, "Well, I've got 10."
Oh, this is fun.
So don't feel bad.
Okay. I thought of two characters, and I thought of them mostly because I love the books they're in, I love the authors, and I just thought they were badasses. So the first character is Mirabar from the Chronicles of Sir Kara by Laura Resnick, which I think is a tragically underrated series of epic fantasy. It's a great world. I love the politics in it, the cultures. It's fabulous. Mirabar, however, is a pure badass because she controls fire. And it just doesn't get better than that. So I think that's cool. I would like to burn things. And there you go. So that's my logic behind that one. My other
fire.
Yeah, exactly. Fire. My other one that I chose is Kamala from the Magister trilogy by C.S. Friedman. C.S. Friedman is amazing. I love the woman. Her books are fabulous. She does anti-heroes better than anyone else, and anti-heroes are my fantasy drug of choice. So that's great, and I think Kamala was a strong character. She knew what she wanted to do, and she wasn't afraid to do anything to get what she wanted, and I just loved it. I think taking a walk through C.S. Friedman's world in any of her characters' perspectives would be fabulous.
Now, the Magister?
Magister, yeah.
I'm trying to think if I have read those. I think I have. But it's been a long time.
Let's see.
Legacy of Kings.
Yeah.
Hold on, yeah. I'm looking. I'm pulling up the.
A Feast of Souls.
Pause for Wikipedia.
Yeah, pause for Wikipedia.
So Boy, Feast those, of those Souls, and then Wings so of Wrath, and then Legacy of Kings was the trilogy.
Yeah, the covers look really, really familiar. What were you gonna say, Django?
I don't think I've read those. I've read some of C.S. Friedman and really enjoyed it, but for some reason I never got to that trilogy.
I liked it. I thought the last book left a little to be desired. It wasn't up to her standard, I don't think, but the rest of the trilogy I think was fabulous.
I'll have to put more books on the pile. The pile is in serious danger of collapse now.
Oh, yes, yes. And I tell you what, people listen to this podcast and their piles grow.
Yeah, and that's the problem.
It is. It's a big problem. What's fun is to add books to John DiNardo's to be read pile, because that's a lot of fun. I got to tell you right now. So that's one of the reasons why I enjoy doing this show so much, is because we just name all these books and John just scribbles furiously. Gotta get that one. Yeah, I think actually he probably listens to the podcast at this point with his Amazon window open. So you can just search and click and, you know, buy with one click right now. So,
ever since I talked myself into getting Amazon Prime, it's actually been really dangerous. The level of the impulse buy level has gone way down. So it's like I could just click on something and it shows up my house 2 days later, and I don't even have to worry about getting enough in one basket to get free shipping. And it's like, oh God, help me. If they find me buried under a giant pile of books in a few years, you'll know who to blame.
Well, and see, for me, it's similar to iTunes. iTunes was really dangerous to me because now I can just buy the one song. So I'm going to save tons of money. No.
You'll just buy a lot more songs.
I just buy more songs. And so the Kindle for me is like that. It's like, huh, I've got the Kindle. And, oh, if I want a book, I just click it. Boom, it's on my Kindle. No big deal. You know, I'll read more and I'll save money because no, you just buy too many. It's insane. Well, Sarah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I get a ton of books every week, at least 10 from publishers. And then every week I probably buy 10 more on top of it. Man. So my house is a very scary place right now.
Oh, I bought extra bookshelves. Yeah, I bought extra bookshelves for the books that the publisher started sending us as soon as we started.
I bought an extra bookshelf, and no joke, it was 5 shelves almost to my ceiling. 2 weeks later, it was full. Yeah. There are books on the floor, and I have piles everywhere, and I have them hidden under my bed and in my coat closet. And it's fabulous. I love it.
When I moved to Seattle, there's a downstairs room in our house that I think was supposed to be an office or something, but I turned it into just a library. So it's got bookshelves all around the wall and then a center aisle. And so we haven't filled it yet, but we're getting there.
Oh, I would love to have a library.
Shut up.
The best thing is with the we keep the door closed to keep the cats out of there. And so if you open the door, it smells like books. Like you go in there and it smells like you've walked into a library. I love it.
You know what? I've heard the same thing about Fred.
But that he smells like a library?
Yes.
He just rubs himself with books all day.
Well, you remember the old Scrooge McDuck where Scrooge would dive into the basement full of gold? He'd swim through it. That's what Fred and Jeff do with their books, both of them.
Ah.
I'm absolutely certain of it. Jeff's like, I got nothing to say.
No, because when we moved down here to Virginia, we only had about 19 days to pack everything up and come down here, and we ended up jettisoning probably at least a third of our collection, if not more. And I've been doing, you know, I've been a lot of stuff that I do want to replace. I've been replacing with ebooks at this point. I've been pretty good. I mean, I've bought quite a few books since I've been down here, but I've also resold a lot of them as well. So,
you know, I was going to say, I admire Sarah's ability to read so much and do so many reviews. It's actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, and very impressive.
I wanted to do that, and that was one of the first things I thought I would do with SF Signal. But every time I'd send John a thing, say, "Hey, how about this book?" He'd be like, "No, I'm reading that." What about this book? No, I'm reading that.
Does he get first?
No, I'm reading that.
You know, the only reason I get so much read is because my 2-year-old loves it when I read to her. So I pretty much everything I review, I've read to my kid. I might edit it a little bit. So instead of certain words, I'll say, and he threw flowers at her. Instead of chopping off someone's head, he kissed her, you know. But I read them, every single one to her, and that's the only way I get through my pile.
That's funny.
And in case you missed it, there was a conversation on Twitter the other night between Sarah and Chuck Wendig about how to not cuss around your kids.
That was awesome.
Yes, I especially like the bucket, mother bucket, weather bucket. Yeah. That was pretty good.
It was a good conversation.
So, Django, what do you got?
So, if we're going to take Jeff's first idea, that if it's just a fantasy or a universe that you have to live in, I have to agree that Peter Hamilton's Pandora's Star universe, or more the Void universe, much later, is probably the best.
Yeah.
A lot of his characters just do really well. They live forever. They can be reincarnated. And they live in a universe where, you know, literally everything is possible with perfect virtual reality and, you know, awesome technology. And so that seems like it would be pretty great in terms of, you know, just living your life. In particular, in the Void trilogy, Ediard the Water Walker has the ability to selectively go back in time, or to more accurately, to rewind the universe to a point of his choosing, which I actually think he uses. He keeps living whole sections of his life over. But as far as I read the book, there's nothing to prevent him from living very small sections over. So I think it would be really good for him to like redo conversations. He's like, oh, I pissed that guy off. And he goes back like 30 seconds and do it again. I would love that, man. I would be great at everything in that universe. If I had to sort of participate in the story, I think I kind of want to be the old mentor because it seems like a pretty good gig. Like if you turn up, you have to act cryptic, and then you hand out quests to the sort of underqualified and usually underage hero and send him into mortal danger while you kind of sit around doing nothing. This is the sort of Dumbledore character, right? Or Gandalf or Merlin.
Yeah, because it worked out great for Dumbledore.
Well, oftentimes you have to die before the end of the book, but usually you get to come back as a ghost or something and say, use the Force, Luke, or whatever. So I think, you know, in terms of story roles, you could do a lot worse.
Because I was going to say, it also worked out pretty well for like Al-Anon, the druid.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing bad happened there. Obi-Wan. You know. Yeah, I mean, that didn't turn out bad for him.
Something bad usually happens about two-thirds of the way through the series. It's kind of one of the rites of passage of the heroic characters. But like I said, you usually get life after death in some form or another. Dumbledore turned up in the magic train station at the end, for example.
Mm-hmm. And he was stuck in a painting.
That's true. Yeah, there's a lot of weird questions about Harry Potter if you really think too hard about it. I wouldn't get into that.
So like, the old mentor. I'm trying to think. I'm actually kind of struggling to think of too many mentors that survived. I mean, Gandalf did, but he had to go to the West.
Yeah, same with Merlin. He ultimately had to leave.
Or was it the East?
Yeah. In Once and Future King, Merlin gets to live backwards through all of time. That sounds pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. He somehow winds up in the 13th century with like shotguns. So,
but know. What if you were like, I'm going to become the mentor, and then you find out you're going to be the mentor to Saruman.
That's possible. I don't know. I mean, the thing about being the mentor, being the hero usually involves an awful lot of hard work. Being the mentor seems pretty easy. And usually, the other thing is you have to be old to be the mentor. It's like required. So, I mean, you may die in the end, but you've usually lived a pretty good life already.
Hey, if you're going to talk about
mentors. If you want to be guaranteed to live to an old age, then, you know, you be the mentor because then you have to instruct the hero on what his epic quest is.
You got to mention Chun from the Adventures of Remo Williams.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do. Possibly the greatest mentor ever.
I told you I had to help some guy collect those books. It was a guy I knew in Fresno.
Yes, he did.
When I moved to Chattanooga, he's like, go to the bookstore and look for these books for me. Remo Williams. Sheesh. So I thought of a good one.
Ooh.
My pick would be Harry Dresden's mechanic.
Because he's getting rich?
That guy never going broke.
That's true.
Nice, steady income. You know, just put the Blue Beetle back together.
There's a lot of merchants in fantasy worlds who must be doing really well.
I did think of a couple that I wouldn't want to be. Mm. For example, I wouldn't want to be Wolverine's anger management counselor.
I wouldn't want to be anyone around Wolverine except for Wolverine. There's a part in the new movie when he's like lying down next to his love interest.
Yes.
He has a dream and he wakes up with his claws out. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, you couldn't sleep in the same bed with that guy for more than a day without getting killed.
Would that be considered premature snicked?
It possibly.
I think just about
considered premature death.
I got another one. I wouldn't want to be a red shirt on the Enterprise.
It depends which Enterprise.
And it depends on who plays you too.
Mm-hmm.
In TNG, they did a little bit better. The original series red shirts were not in great shape.
Yeah, where did I read that one of the original red shirts was the actor that played the most interesting man in the world?
Yes, I saw that too. Yes, yes.
That's a that'd be a nice gig. Get killed off and then you know, become that guy.
I from what I understand, he said that he doesn't act in science fiction movies often, but when he does it well.
He gets killed.
All right, I have a question for the class.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Sorry, I don't mean to hijack the
conversation.
No, like, please do.
As if we were going in any particular direction.
Well, besides Peter F. Hamilton's Void universe, what would be the best universe without characters, without anything, that if you could just drop into it, what fantasy or science fiction world would you want to live in and why?
It, for a lot of universes, it depends really heavily on who you are. A lot of the fantasy.
What if you were just you in a world?
Okay, if you just get
portaled in.
Yeah, just tunnel yourself in.
A lot of the fantasy universes would be pretty brutal then. Like, a lot of them are pretty good for, like, the nobles, and then everybody else is, like, hard scrabble peasants getting slaughtered by orcs or whatever.
A lot of different planets in the culture by Banks that I would certainly like. I would love to live in the whatever the Confederated worlds are in Hyperion by Simmons, where you can basically jump from world to world. A question like that, I think you mean what science fiction universe would you live in as it exists at the beginning of the story? You
know? Yeah, pretty much.
The galaxy in the Knight's Dawn trilogy is a wonderful place until about
at
page 150.
Yeah, and then it all turns to shit. But
In Greg Egan's book Diaspora, the characters have it pretty good. You know, they live in these polities, which are these sort of virtual reality city states, and they manage to escape from the end of the universe, if I recall correctly. Yeah. So, you know, that's pretty sweet. The culture is pretty good. I think it's really the sci-fi novels, the sort of far future sci-fi, are often pretty utopian, except for whatever edge case the book is actually about.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd kind of like to be dropped into Skyrim so I could find the vampire who killed my horse and stake his ass out in the sun.
That must have been some vampire, because that horse is a badass.
I hate the vampires in that game. They killed my horse.
I once wandered off and found that my horse had kicked a giant to death. I was like, good horse, please don't hurt me.
So have any of you ever played World of Warcraft?
Is that a rhetorical question?
No, it's an actual question.
No, yes, I have.
Okay,
really the only one here who has?
I have. So the first thing you do as soon as you get a horse is you ride around and you get as much of your map as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was doing with the horse in Skyrim. I'm like, I'll just ride around and get my map. And then all of a sudden, vampires. Yeah, and there was like five of them, and they just descended on me and killed my horse. And I'm like, no! Wait, horse. I can restart. So I went back to my last save point. My horse was alive. I'm like, yay! I said, well, I'm not going to do that again. And then I forgot.
Oh.
And I started like exploring again, and I went into the same area, and here come these vampires, and they kill my horse again. And I'm like, no, I forgot to save.
And again. Speaking of which, actually, like, being in the World of Warcraft universe, as long as you get to be a player character, seems pretty sweet. Like,
but which side would you pick? And I'm going to tell you right now, there's only one right answer.
I have to say Horde.
Okay, good.
Because I played Horde for God knows how many years.
Yes, Horde. Now, would you want to be on
Since what the
server?
Game was released.
Now, what server would you want to be on?
I don't know. They're all different now from when I started, so yeah, I can't answer that reasonably. But it'd be nice if your job is just to go out into a field and whack monsters until coins fall out.
The flip side of that would be your job is to go out and cut the ears off of something and bring them back.
Yeah.
That's kind of gross.
Yeah. You'd have to have a high tolerance for gross out.
Yes.
But you know, I think it would work. You know, every once in a while you get killed, but then you just turn up at the graveyard again. So No harm done.
If the World of Warcraft were real and people were really going out and skinning that many animals, there'd be no animals left.
Maybe. My question is, the vendors who like buy all the dead animal parts, where do they get their money? It's like, man, I'm sure happy to have all these basilisk spleens and never sell anything ever. You know, they just disappear and I hand out gold to anyone who comes by.
Now, you're not supposed to ask those questions. Go ahead, Sarah.
The economy doesn't really work that well.
On a fantasy side, to hijack the conversation again.
Oh, please do.
To go back to the question, on a fantasy side, my answer would probably be unpopular. But I guess if I had to be dropped into any one world in epic fantasy, it would probably be Steven Erikson's Malazan because of all the history and how huge it is. And it's a brutal place I don't really want to live in. But if I could choose any, I think that one it would probably be it for me. I don't know. What do you guys think for epic fantasy?
Epic fantasy. I mean, Malazan, I feel like you get waxed by some demigod before going five steps, right? It's like,
uh-oh. That's part of the excitement, right? You got to live on the edge, dude.
Although, on the other hand, you can become a god just by being really good at something. So if you're like the best chef in the world, you become the god of cooking.
Exactly. So you wouldn't just live there to live there. You'd live there because you could be divinity, man. You got to see the full...
If you got into Terry Pratchett's Discworld, would everyone be just like hilariously witty all the time? Because that sounds pretty fun too.
That would be pretty good.
You know,
but if everybody's hilariously witty, then no one is.
Well, but except for me, the outsider, I'd come in and it'd be like being in the best comedy ever.
Jeff, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say to answer Sarah's question, I'd really have to go with Shannara because I'd get to do all the stuff I'd like to do in Tolkien's universe, except I wouldn't have to deal with copyright infringement. So,
well, see, I would be worried because, like, if I said A Song of Fire and Ice, I'd probably spawn in the Red Wedding.
Yeah. Well, and in general, the peasants in that book don't fare very well. It's like, another 1,000 were massacred.
How his entire universe has more than 10 people alive in it. Everybody dies. Everybody.
They have a very high birth rate.
They must. I mean, rabbits or something, because everybody's dead.
And see, if I said like the Sword of Truth series, I'd probably spawn and someone would say, do you serve Dark and Rall? And I'd be like, who? And they'd kill me. If I said a Wheel of Time,
I would hope before you portal into the universe, you could study up.
Well, we don't know. That's not the rule. That's not the question. It's just like which one. Yeah. You know, if I said a Wheel of Time, I'd probably wake up on the end of like somebody's spears in the desert. Yeah. They'd be like, "Hey, what are you doing here, white boy?"
There was an anime recently a year ago or so about a guy. The Japanese have this period called the Warring States, which is a favorite for war games and fiction and all kinds of stuff, about a guy who's kind of a nerd and really into those games, and then he gets transported back in time and can give people advice based on his knowledge of future events. So it'd be like if you were a big history nerd and you get dropped back into the Civil War or something, and you could be like... Except it was also a fantasy world and everybody had magic and stuff. So it's not super clear why everything had to go the same way, but it did. I don't know why.
I think all around I would wanna be Superman's lazy cousin Larry.
Yes. I was seriously thinking about saying Superman as what character I would wanna be, because like it seems like Superman, you know, if you just gave up on the whole truth and justice and the American way thing, like, who's going to stop you?
Batman.
Yeah, but Batman. You know, but,
I'm sorry.
That's a tough one because, number one, I've got a contentious relationship with DC anyway. Number two, once again, yeah, that would be wonderful. And then I think about Alan Moore's For the Man Who Has Everything, and which is just such a heartbreaking story about the fact that there is such a gap in Cal's life.
I feel like you might end up taking over the world. That's been explored in a couple of comics.
Yeah.
The Superman who just decides that he's in charge of everything and no one could stop him.
Yeah.
Injustice Among Us.
And none of those ever
or
tend
Red
to be
Sun.
Good, so.
But I don't know. Fantasy.
Does that answer your question at all, Sarah? Or no?
Yeah, no, that's good. I was just...
I really wish I had an answer for the epic fantasy part, but I really can't think of any epic fantasy worlds that I really particularly...
Epic fantasy worlds tend to be either pretty crappy to begin with or to become rapidly crappy.
Yeah, it's like you love to live in the Shire, but then Sharky would show up.
Yeah.
It would suck. Anyway, we have gone all over the place.
Maybe Xanth. Since everyone has magic powers there, even if you come in from the outside.
Yeah, good point.
Then you'd get magic.
Or even, what do you call it? It's not epic fantasy, but the Incantations of Immortality. That sounds like at least like a very fun universe, yeah. Even though I didn't care for the stories all that much. But the weird little world that these constants live in was pretty trippy.
Mm. I can now, I'm picturing Django in heavy metal.
Oh, God.
The movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which part?
I don't know why. To bring this back full circle to Django's anime stuff, how about this? We just say that we all want to be in Space Captain Harlock.
Yes, as long as I don't have to pilot one of those little fighters, because as far as I can tell, they all get blown up every episode, and then they somehow have more.
They are the red shirts of the anime universe.
They kind of are.
All right, we need to start wrapping this up because we're running out of time. Right. Let's go with any final thoughts on this topic or any other, Sarah.
Oh, God. My website is bookwormblues.net, and you can find me trolling Twitter all the time at bookwormblues, or go to Facebook, and I'm at facebook.com/bookwormblues. And I am also on SF Signal every other week for Special Needs and Strange Worlds. Or you can just Google me and bug me somehow. It's fine. I might make fun of your email, but I do read it. So there you go.
To look me up, it's spelled just like Django in the movie with a silent D. Although the movie is not about me, no matter how similar it may seem. So I'm Django Wexler. On Twitter at Django Wexler or DjangoWexler.com on the web, and you know, feel free to get in touch with me, say hi, and my next Lost in Anime Land column should be coming in a week or two. I'm hard at work watching anime, which really can't be described as work, but that's me.
And Jeff? I'm Jeff Patterson. Jeff Patterson. I'm on Twitter at JeffPatterson11, and I blog at Gravity Lens, which can be found at BadDayStudio.com.
All right. Thanks, guys, for coming on. I also want to encourage our listeners to go and tell us which characters they would like to be. Do that in the comments on the post. And if you can beat Tam to be the first one to comment, we'll call you like the prize winner or something. We'll see. We don't know. Tam is pretty quick. It's usually between Tam and Paul. We'll see who can get there first.
I was going to mention Paul.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on tonight, guys. This has been a lot of fun.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will see you next time. Thank you for listening to the SF Signal podcast. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the link to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com, and you can also search SF Signal in iTunes to find the feed. To comment about this or any of our podcast episodes, please call our voicemail line at 720-277-9082. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us boost the signal by telling your friends. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day. From weekly mind melts featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SFNF field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, new author spotlights, movie reviews, videos, science fiction, fantasy, and horror tidbits, free fiction roundups, and the new genre-related crowdfunding roundups. Click the RSS button in the sidebar to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo?
Angry robot.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
And scene.